Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. The title of this podcast is Few Dare to Tell the Truth About Stock Investing. This is the third podcast I've recorded, and I'm recording it in August of 2008. The focus of this podcast is 9 words that appeared in a column by Dallas Morning News columnist Scott Burns, in a column that he wrote in June of 2005. In my assessment, those 9 words were of earth-shaking importance. I believe that when Scott published those words, the story should have been written up on the front page of the Wall Street Journal so that all investors would know what Scott had said and why he said it and what the implications are for middle-class investors of today. The reality is Scott's words received little attention. I wrote something about it on my blog, but in general, his words were ignored, and I would like to do what I can to change that. I would like to bring attention to the point that he was making, and I really would like every middle-class investor to think over the significance of these 9 words by Dallas Morning News columnist Scott Burns. First, I'll give you a little of the background so that you'll understand the context in which the 9 words appeared. Scott Burns has been writing about safe withdrawal rates for a long time. The safe withdrawal rate concept is a concept that is used by retirement planners to help people learn how to structure their retirement plans. The purpose of the safe withdrawal rate calculation is to tell people how much they need to save to finance a safe retirement. And what the calculation aims to do is to tell someone who has a large stock allocation, perhaps 75% stocks, how much they can take out of their portfolio each year and be certain that their retirement will last for at least 30 years. So if you were to retire at age 65 and you use the safe withdrawal rate to decide how much to take out each year to cover your living expenses, you would be virtually certain that your retirement would last until you were age 95. This number is used in just about all retirement planning advice that you see. It's used on websites, it's used in calculators on websites, it's used in just about every newspaper article that makes reference to retirement planning. All retirement planners are familiar with the safe withdrawal rate concept, and most use the old school studies, which are the studies that Scott was writing about primarily, in offering advice to their clients. The old school studies say that the safe withdrawal rate for a high stock portfolio is always 4%. Now, what that means is if you saved $1 million before retiring, you could take out of your portfolio every year of your retirement $40,000. That's 4% of $1 million. And you could adjust that amount for inflation each year. So you could take out an inflation-adjusted $40,000 every year for 30 years and be sure that your retirement plan was not going to go bust. All of this presuming that stocks perform in the future, at least somewhat, as they have always performed in the past. The number is calculated using the historical stock return data. The people designing these studies look at how stocks have always performed in the past, and assuming that they will continue to perform in a somewhat similar way in the future, they're able to tell us how much we can afford to take out of our retirement plans. What they do is they look at a worst case scenario, the worst case of what's happened in the past, and if the 4% withdrawal works in the worst case, it obviously would work in any cases better than the worst case. Now, these old school studies have an analytical flaw in them, and I am the person who discovered that flaw. I discovered the flaw back in the mid-1990s when I was putting together my own retire early plan, and I first wrote about this flaw in a direct way in a post that I put to a Motley Fool discussion board in May of 2002. And we discussed it in the retire early community, and we established beyond any reasonable doubt that indeed these studies are flawed. They do report the number wrong, and not just a little bit wrong. They're wildly off the mark. And the reason is that the old school studies do not include an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the starting date of the retirement. And that's the single biggest factor in determining the safe withdrawal rate. The safe withdrawal rate at a time of high valuations, the highest valuations we've ever seen were the valuations that applied in January of 2000. So someone who retired in January of 2000 and who used one of the old school studies or the old school calculators to plan his retirement and planned to take out 4% a year had only a 30% chance of seeing that retirement survive 30 years. The old school study said that the safe withdrawal rate at that time was 4%, meaning that he could afford to take $40,000 out of his portfolio. The historical data examined with an analytically valid methodology showed that the safe withdrawal rate at that time was only 1.6%, so that retiree could afford to take out only $16,000 per year in each year of his retirement. So those retirees have been taking out more than double what they're able to take out according to the historical data for 8 years now. On the other hand, the other side of the story is that when valuations are low, the 4% number dramatically understates the safe withdrawal rate. If you go back to a time when valuations were at the levels that applied in the early 1980s, the safe withdrawal rate for a high stock portfolio was 9%. So at that time, a retiree retiring at that time could take out $90,000 per year from a $1 million portfolio and be virtually certain that retirement would survive 30 years. So the valuation level that applies on the starting date of the retirement is of huge importance. And all of the advice, with rare exceptions, that are given to people planning retirements today assumes that the starting date valuation has no effect. These old school studies, it's not that they measure the effect of valuation differently than the new school studies. It's that they ignore that factor altogether. Now, Scott Burns, because he had written about safe withdrawal rates quite a bit in his column, I wrote to Scott to let him know about the findings in the retire early community and to get some publicity for the work we had done. There's a new school calculator available at my website, and also at the website of John Walter Russell. John is the person who does the statistical work for these calculators. He's my partner in developing these calculators. His website is early-retirement-planning-insights.com. So you can see the Retirement Risk Evaluator calculator either at John's site or at my site. And that calculator is the only calculator on the internet that gives you accurate numbers that you can use for putting together a retirement plan, because it's the only one that includes an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the starting date of the retirement. So we had done this work in the Retire Early community for several years. We've had thousands and thousands and thousands of threads discussing all the various aspects, what the historical data says, all the new research, and so forth. And I wrote to Scott, and he's written now three columns on the new school approach. He obviously, I will have future podcasts in which I will discuss Scott's views on safe withdrawal rates in greater depth, but for this podcast, I just want to focus on these nine magic words. Scott obviously understands that valuation levels affect long-term returns. That's as clear can be. And in this column from June of 2005, he wrote that there are people that have examined the safe withdrawal rate issue from a new perspective and have discovered flaws in the old school studies, and that the old school numbers are off by as much as 2%. At the top of the bubble, they were off actually by a little more than 2%. The safe withdrawal rate was 1.6 at the absolute top of the bubble, and the old school studies report that it is 4%, that it's always 4%, regardless of valuations. But the most amazing thing in that column are the nine words that appear almost as a throwaway. Scott, you can tell, if you think about it, the wheels were turning in his head. It was one thing to report the safe withdrawal rate accurately, which obviously was a good thing to do. But the next step after you report the safe withdrawal rate accurately is to think, why hasn't it been reported accurately all these years? So he was sort of puzzling over that question when he wrote this column. And he has a line near the bottom where he puts forward his viewpoint as to why no one until now had reported the safe withdrawal rate accurately. Obviously, this is an important number. This is a number that we all use to plan our retirements. So if you get that number wrong, you've gotten it all wrong. Any investment model that gets the number we use to plan our retirements wrong is just hopelessly flawed, because millions of people are going to suffer, in all likelihood, one of the worst life setbacks imaginable. Imagine getting to age 70 or age 75 and being left bankrupt, being left with no money to go forward, no means of earning a living. And these are people who didn't retire rashly. These are people who went to the trouble to go on the internet, enter the word safe retirement into a search engine, check out the research, and find out for themselves what sort of withdrawal rate they could afford to take, but who were misled by studies giving demonstrably false results. Results that are nowhere even close to being accurate. And giving demonstrably false results on an issue that everyone who has any familiarity with how stock investing works should know the answer to. The question of whether valuations affect long-term returns should not be a controversial one. It is. It's intensely controversial. Please take my word for it. I know what I'm talking about. But it should not be. Bill Bernstein is the author of a book entitled The Four Pillars of Investing. And Bill looks into this question in his book. And he says, valuations affect long-term returns as a matter of mathematical certainty. You can't get any stronger than that. I don't know how you could possibly state it more strongly. And his book is well known in the investing community. So anyone with any knowledge of the field knows that valuations affect long-term returns. And yet, we have had these retirement studies out for years now And they are used almost universally. Almost any article you read about retirement planning includes some sort of reference to these studies. And yet none of them, until the study that John and I did, came out. John did the research and then the calculator we did together. None of them reported the numbers accurately. How could that be? How could such a thing happen? And truth be told, none of the old studies, none of the old school studies have been corrected until this day. I put forward that first post in May of 2002. It is now August of 2008, over 6 years later. Not one study has been corrected in that time. That's amazing and frightening. You should be frightened. You should be thinking about what this means. So Scott made a little effort to explaining why this is, how this could be. And here's what he said. It is information most people don't want to hear. It is information most people don't want to hear. What do you think of that? I wonder sometimes if it just hits me harder because I come from a journalism background. All of my training is in looking for stories. When I was reporting on tax legislation, my job would be to go to congressional hearings that might last 4 or 5 hours. And the job was to go through all of that material, pick out the few lines of greatest significance to my readers, and write that up. Write up 500 words or 1,000 words telling people the quote-unquote news. You know, so they didn't have to listen to the whole 6 hours of testimony. They would find out what was important because someone informed in that subject matter attended on their behalf and focused on what mattered and brought it to their attention. So when I see those 9 words in a column, my spidey sense starts to tingle. I'm saying, whoa, what is this all about? It is information most people don't want to hear. He's saying a number of things. He's saying that most experts do not tell us the truth about stock investing, isn't he? Isn't that the import of what he is saying? It is information most people don't want to hear. He's explaining why no one has reported the safe withdrawal rate accurately before the retire early community took up the issue. And then two, he's telling us why no one reports the safe withdrawal rate accurately. Why? We don't want them to. We don't want to hear it. Please don't tell us accurate information about stocks. We can't take it. It makes our tummies hurt. Isn't that what he's saying? This isn't Rob Bennett saying this. This is Scott Burns, a columnist for the Dallas Morning News, a well-respected figure in the field. This is documented. You can search for Scott's column on the internet. If you go to the Buzz section of my website, there's a link to the Scott Burns column right there on the first page of the Buzz section. It is information most people don't want to hear. Why? Why wouldn't we want to hear it? Why would we want wrong numbers to plan our retirements? Let's make a comparison to try to drive the point home. Say that you were planning on building your own house, and you went to the bookstore. You were obviously going to spend a lot of money doing this and a lot of your time, a lot of effort. You go to the bookstore to find a book on how to build your own house. And you find two of them. And you go to the salesperson there and you say, I see there are two books on the topic. Can you make a recommendation? And he says, oh, yes, I'm familiar with both of those books. He says the first one is not at all popular. I would not recommend it. The first book What they focused on in that book is getting the numbers accurate. So if you use that first book, they have charts there where they tell you how much it's going to cost to build your home. All of the numbers in there are accurate. And they have other sections of the book where they describe how long it's probably going to take you. Again, they give you accurate information. And the whole book is really focused on what it purports to be. The title is How to Build Your Own Home, and that's really what they provide in that book. We get a lot of negative feedback on it, and I would try to steer you away from that one. The second one, that's a very different story. All of the numbers in that book are wrong, wildly wrong. They don't tell you how much it will actually cost. They understate it. They understate it dramatically. So it'll make you feel really good, because if you're trying to build your own home, this will lead you to believe that you can do it for a fraction of what it costs in the real world. And they greatly understate the amount of time it takes as well. So you'll be able to make plans to be able to build your home in a month or two, even though it really takes a year or two. You'll have no idea of the realities from reading this book. And it makes people feel really good. It's a real smiley face book. People love it. So I recommend strongly you go with the second one, even if it costs a little more. That's your better deal. How would you respond to such a thing? The question answers itself. When building a home, we make an effort to be rational. And part of being rational means you have to know the realities. You have to know what you're up against. You want accurate information. Now, that's obviously not what's going on in the stock investing area. Not if Scott Burns tells us that accurate information on safe withdrawal rates is information most people don't want to hear. Are there any fields of human endeavor you can think of where people prefer inaccurate information? I can think of some. The one that comes to mind is the dating area. How many songs have been written about the self-deception we engage in when looking for somebody to start our life with? Smokey Robinson wrote my favorite, "You've Really Got a Hold on Me." He says, "I don't like you, but I love you." He says, "I want to quit now, but I just can't split now." He says, "I don't want to kiss you, but I intend to." Smokey is mixed up. But we all know what Smokey's talking about. He's talking about a human endeavor which is highly emotional. We've all had friends who have gotten mixed up with someone who they are infatuated with, but who we know is not the right person for them. And most of us have done that sort of thing ourselves. So we all know what Smokey's talking about. When it comes to picking dating partners, we often do not do the rational thing. We often do the emotional thing. The question that I'm trying to put in your head is stock investing a rational activity, like building a house? Or is stock investing an emotional activity, like dating? The answer is that it's both. There are rational elements and emotional elements. It is my strongly held view that the emotional elements are dominant in the stock investing project. Emotion dominates. Most of the material that you see written assumes that stock investing is a rational endeavor. So you see all sorts of numbers in tables and charts and logic, all this sort of thing. But it all is on top of a base of pure emotion. So the numbers that are permitted in, the numbers that you can consider and all the analyses that are done are phony numbers. The type of thing that is done in the safe withdrawal rate studies is done in every area of investing. They will spend enormous amounts of time cooking up these studies and then going to conferences and hashing them out from every possible angle. But all of the work is premised on data that ignores the effect of valuations. And even the word valuations, I think, is probably a mistake. When we talk about valuations, what are we talking about? We're talking about people. It's the human side of the investing project that causes high valuations and low valuations. The reason why stock prices get so out of whack at times like today is because people buy and sell stocks, and people are emotional about what happens to their money. So when I say all of this work done in the investing field ignores valuations, what I'm really saying is all of this work ignores people. It ignores the human factor. And if you ignore the human factor, you're going to get all the numbers wrong. You're going to get all the strategies wrong. You're going to get all the advice wrong. What we have is a vicious circle, because I am convinced a lot of the investing experts would like to tell us the truth about stock investing. The title of this podcast is Few Dare to Tell the Truth About Stock Investing. But if you study this matter, as I have studied this in great depth on a daily basis for over 6 years now, what you find is that it is rare to see someone speak the truth about stock investing. There are exceptions, perhaps 10% of what is out there. There are people like Robert Shiller and John Walter Russell and Rob Arnott and Cliff Asness and Ed Easterling and John Molden and Andrew Smithers and a good number of others. Those people stick their necks out on the line and they tell it straight. Most do not. But among the ones that do not, what you often find is that they will hint at the truth. And that's what Scott was doing in that column. He was letting the people who want to know the truth in on the secret. But he didn't put it on the front page of the Dallas Morning News, and the Wall Street Journal didn't pick it up and put it on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, because that would be pushing it. Then you would be sticking the truth in the face of the people who don't want to hear it. I believe we need to know the truth about stock investing. Middle-class investors are more heavily invested in stocks now than they have ever been, and they need to be. We are now responsible for our own retirements. If we are going to finance our retirements responsibly, we need to start addressing investing questions the way we invest building a house questions. We need to start demanding accurate information. And the logical place to start is accurate information on the calculation of a number that we use to plan our retirements. If we can't get accurate information on the numbers, where there shouldn't even be any subjective differences of opinion, the calculation of a number is the calculation of a number. Anyone who wants to can check out what I'm saying here. The historical data is public information. Check it out. Look at my calculator. If the numbers aren't right, check it out for yourself. You don't have to take Rob Bennett's opinion. But we can't get accurate information on that point. If we can't get it on that point, and if we can't get it on planning our retirements, one of the most important questions of investing, all of the work we do from the time we begin saving in our early 20s is aimed at putting together a safe retirement plan. If we can't get accuracy on that, if we can't get the experts to tell us the truth about that, we can't get them to tell us the truth about anything relating to investing. So we've got to start demanding the truth. And that means we have to start desiring the truth. It's a vicious circle, because the experts are not going to feel free to tell us the truth until they get a signal from us that we are open to hearing it. And we can't demand it until we know enough about investing to know that what they're telling us now doesn't add up. Somewhere we've got to break that chain. And my hope is that as stock prices continue to go downward, we will reach a point where the pain we have suffered is great enough. When we start to see these busted retirements in real life and they're happening to people we care about, we will reach a point where we will say, wait a minute, we need to change. We need to change the way stock investing advice is delivered. And the core thing that needs to change is the confidence we have in the passive investing model. If you want to hear more about that, please listen to podcast number 2, Passive Investing versus Rational Investing. But that's where all the trouble starts. The idea that we don't need to change our stock allocations when stock prices change dramatically. I hope you'll listen for future podcasts. Please send feedback to me if you have any to offer on what you've heard today. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.